Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. Podcast 591. Had to double check, but we are 9 podcasts away from podcast 600. It's hard to believe that I've done that many podcasts. And aside from doing walk and talks, I haven't done a winter walk and talk since last year. I don't even know if I've ever done a winter walk and talk. It is a beautiful, clear, moonlit winter night. It's actually warm. It's only 21 degrees, but we feel around here like that's pretty warm. And so it's a good time for a winter walk and talk. So we're going to do that in podcast 591. Well, you know, this time of the year, it's cold out here. It's been kind of an interesting week because last week it was really, really cold. And last week I had a really good time with my 2007 Crown Vic just driving around with the overdrive off. And it reminded me of the late 60s, early 70s LTDs. You know, they didn't have overdrive back in the day. And it was just fun driving around. There's nothing better than a V8 rear-wheel drive car with a little bit of weight in the trunk for cruising around in snow and ice because they just handle great. And, of course, my 2007 Crown Vic came from xgovernmentcars.com, Minnesota's only dealer that specializes in one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs. And there's a bunch of really good stuff about xgovernmentcars.com. First of all, the selection, they've got the Dodge Chargers, they've got the Crown Vics while they last, the Ford Police sedans, the Ford Police SUVs, but also the big SUVs, SUVs like the Ford Expeditions and the GMC Yukons. And if you need a car and you need a loan and you have a job, you can get approved. They've got great terms for credit. And of course, ex-government cars takes trades. They pay the highest values every day without a bunch of BS. And I've seen Ed do it many times. Don't forget the 3-day love it guarantee, also exclusively at ex-government cars. So here's what you do. First of all, go online, exgovernmentcars.com, check out the selection, or get your butt down to ex-government cars. They're now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North. You can call them old school at 763-777-8782 or check them out online at xgovernmentcars.com. And yes, I did bring the bullhorn out here.
xgovernmentcars.com.
So the rules of the walk and talk are, you know, basically, I put all these rules on myself, but the rules for the walk and talk are no editing, no real plan, just talk and walk. And I got to tell you, people say, wow, we really love those walk and talk podcasts, or they love the off the cuff podcasts. And I don't. I don't because it's just after you do 600 podcasts, you know, if for me to do these when I was at podcast 260, you know, it was novel to me. And I thought, oh, this will be great because I can just do this and it's done. But after 600 podcasts or close to 600 podcasts, you know, I feel like I sound addled when I'm not really things haven't been thought through and I haven't prepared and I haven't outlined and really thought about what I want to say and why I want to say it. So it's hard for me to do these because, you know, when you do this, you listen to yourself while you're doing it. And if you're not happy with it, it gets, you feel like you're not able to express yourself clearly. So, and then my problem is I don't just talk about stuff like the weather and sports and things like that. You know, what happens to me is when I do these or when I think about doing these, I think in terms of, well, what was I thinking about this morning? You know, what was I thinking about when I woke up this morning, or what's been running through my mind? Because usually that's pretty good stuff, and it tends to be topical because, you know, it's what happens when you're taking in all kinds of information, and then what bubbles to the surface usually is right as you're having your coffee in the morning, and those are usually pretty heavy. To me, they're pretty heavy concepts. So then trying to just talk about those concepts in an off-the-cuff manner gets really hard. And it doesn't, I listen to it and I think, God, I really didn't do the idea justice. You know, I should have gone further than that. you know, or I should have thought about it, or I should have done some research on it. But sometimes I think it's good to just talk and walk and not put so much effort into it. I was at dinner with some friends this weekend, and we were saying, you know, why do we make things so hard? That was one of the things that we were talking about. And we were talking about, you know what we were talking about? We were talking about friends dying. And we were talking about people that, they die and they go to heaven. And the first thing that whoever is the guard at the door says, you know, why did you make it so hard? You know, it didn't have to be that hard. Why make it hard? I don't know. And I've been thinking about that too. And the answer to that question is, I think I'd be bored if I didn't make it as hard as I've made it for myself. So that's the answer to that question. And I think that was the conclusion that we came up with at our dinner, that we make things, the three of us, we were talking, and we make things hard because we'd be bored otherwise. So rather than just go make it easy, we make things difficult, some people. But that was one of the thoughts that I had today. That was kind of based on the dinner that we had the other night. I think it was Friday night. And I actually ran into somebody that I'm following on Twitter. Actually, I didn't run into her. She sent me a text through Twitter, and I didn't see it till halfway through the dinner, that said, I just saw you go into the Monte Carlo with a bunch of people to the back room, and then we closed the place. So sorry if I missed you. Actually, I sent her a text that said, well, come on back. We're just sitting back here drinking coffee. And the waiter finally went home, and we sat there and drank coffee and ate cheesecake and talked about weird stuff like that. But that's the kind of stuff that I think about. So those are the kinds of concepts I think that are kind of hard to just talk about off the top of your head on any given Sunday, right? So the other thing, and this is the concept that I really wanted to get to in this podcast, because we are on the eve of the inauguration of the 45th president, who will be president by next time this week, you know, next week at this time. So he's going to be inaugurated on the 20th, right? Which is coming up this weekend. In podcast time. So this is the time that I'm speaking of. So if you're listening to this podcast at some point in the future, you know, 5 years, 4 years, 2 years, whatever, this is what was going on in my head on the eve of the inauguration of the 45th president, which has some people very upset and has other people triumphant and ecstatic. And I happened across, you know, my son and I have this thing where he taught me to do this, so I'm going to confess my sins. What you do is you get HBO Now, you pay $14, but you can cancel it at any time. So you cancel HBO Now, then you switch over to Showtime. That's $14, and it's on demand. So this is the on-demand services for HBO and Showtime. And I don't even know what they call the Showtime one, but I'm still working my way through HBO right now. So and now I'm into the movies. And so I've often recommended this movie All the Way. It's about LBJ, and it's Bryan Cranston. And really, it's just an opportunity for Bryan Cranston to show his acting chops playing Lyndon Johnson, right? It's the actor who gets to play the great man. And so that's a pretty good movie, because I think it shows, and I've recommended it to people because I think it shows internally what a difficult job the presidency is, simply because it's a political office and things don't happen just because you want them to happen. Certainly the president has the ability to make things happen that he wants to, but he is circumscribed by the amount of support that he has politically, and he's circumscribed by the amount of support that he has in Congress. And he is also controlled to a certain degree by his staff, by his cabinet, by the people that he's chosen to put on his team, or she, you know. And obviously it's going to be a male president, so we don't need to say he or she, because she is not part of the factor here. But I'm just saying the office of president in the United States is a political office, and it's always been a difficult office because most of the constitutional power is vested in Congress, and to a lesser degree in the courts. not a lot in the presidency. The Constitution is not real verbose when it comes to the presidency. So these are two good movies for people to watch to really see the presidency in action, because of course Lyndon Johnson was a politician, as in at least one historic, you know, biopic kind of movie, he's described as probably one of, you know, two or three of the greatest politicians who've ever occupied the office of presidency. And certainly in the present time frame, you know, since the 1960s, probably the most consummate politician, the most effective politician that's ever occupied the White House. And I will include in that Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton. Johnson wrote the book on coercing legislators to do his bidding and being able to strong arm people, and he was very effective. If you read any of his histories, he was very effective at getting what he wanted from people. And to see it portrayed by Bryan Cranston is just a treat all the way through. But there's another movie on HBO now, and I don't know, I can't remember the name, because here's the thing about HBO now that I got to mention very quickly. So if you're watching HBO now on Apple TV and you stop it or pause it, walk away and forget about it, it pops out of HBO Now, and then you can't find the movie again. Because there's no history that I can find, you know, like you have on Netflix, where you can go recently viewed and go find what you were watching. So you have to remember the title, and I don't remember the title of this movie, but it's by John Frankenheimer, who's a director. I think it's John Frankenheimer who directed, I believe he directed The Exorcist. He only produces a movie like once every 10 or 15 years. He's a very strange dude. He made this movie about Johnson and the decision pretty much to escalate the Vietnam War. So it's how we got into Vietnam, and it's how, you know, the war was escalated. And the guy playing Johnson is an English guy. You've seen him in a bunch. He's always in English gangster movies. But, you know, he approximates the Lyndon, the accent and everything. The thing is, once you see Bryan Cranston play Lyndon Johnson, you can't get that out of your head. So this guy isn't as good a Johnson as Bryan Cranston is, but he's pretty good. And after a while, you forget about it, because it's really a cinematic portrayal of a personality. But it's then all the other people involved, George Ball and Robert McNamara and the others, are all played by various character actors and people that you've seen before, and it's pretty good. I mean, it's a pretty good movie, actually. And because it's Frankenheimer, it's pretty well shot and put together. And I think it was made for HBO a number of years ago. But it's about how we got into Vietnam and how a guy who perceived himself as pretty much a strong Democrat, a union guy who fought for civil rights, who wanted to, you know, use great works by government to fix things and improve people's lot in life, you know, a classic liberal Democrat. You know, and I'm not using that in a pejorative term. I'm just saying he was, you know, Lyndon Johnson pretty much wrote the book on liberal Democratic governors, government. He believed in all those things, even more so than Kennedy, I think, to a certain degree. So, and it was all about, I mean, I'm cynical about it. I think it was all about, for him, votes and money. But in any case, he sponsored some of some great legislation that liberalized things in this country, you know, for lack of a better term. And again, I'm not using it as a negative. Civil Rights Act, you know, the Voting Rights Act, you know, the great society programs that he created, urban renewal, all those things. If you're a Democrat, those are, you know, super standard Democrat ideas. So he is a forgotten icon of Democratic leadership, largely because of Vietnam. Well, I don't need to go back and refight the Vietnam War, and I don't need to go back and give you a history of LBJ's administration. What's interesting about this movie is what came out of it for me when I got up this morning. First of all, it's 2.5 hours. So it's, you know, and it's not a shoot 'em up, and it's not, it doesn't have, it's a biopic, it's a documentary kind of thing about how they made these decisions and how they took these decisions. And, you know, certainly people, Clark Clifford, I think it was George Ball and others, you know, argued against escalating in Vietnam. You know, Clark Clifford in particular argued that, he would be able to have a tactical withdrawal. He didn't need to escalate the war and so on. But here's the thought that I had that I think is interesting, and it's kind of the subject of this whole walk and talk. So I'm going to get to that. Now, it's warmed up, it's so funny to say it's warmed up and it's 21 degrees in the Twin Cities, but I'm sure it's going to get cold again. We've had that deep freeze that usually starts after Christmas and goes until God knows when. Sometimes it's 30 or 40 days. I was talking to a guy from Phoenix who was up here, and, we went in to do hot yoga because it's the only thing you can do to get warm, pretty much, is to be someplace where it's 105 degrees and 40% humidity or whatever. And he was like, I don't think I can take this. I don't think I can take this 14, 15, 12, 5 below zero stuff for very long. And I said, oh no, this goes on for months sometimes, it feels like. What did we go through? One year we had something like 50 days of below zero, like -2, -3, whatever, not to mention the wind chills. Now, when this happens, I have to run a bead of water in the faucet in the bathroom just to make sure that the pipes stay warm, because you do not want burst pipes and you don't want plumbing emergencies in this kind of weather. But if you do, think about Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for home or business, because it doesn't matter whether it's your home or your business. You got all these systems. You want to keep them running right, especially at home, and especially, of course, at business as well, which also has special needs, special regulatory needs, right? So when you have a plumbing or heating problem, or you have a problem with broken pipes, whatever, you want reliable service. And that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. You can call them at 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. That is like one of those stickers that you put on your water heater. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Remember those numbers. Or click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page. Takes you to RyanPlumbing.com. Ryan goes back 4 generations in St. Paul. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. From St. Paul to the full metro, and that includes the suburbs, so it doesn't matter if it's Invergrove Heights or Osseo or Plymouth or, someplace in the North Metro, Maple Grove. Give them a call, 651-224-4771, 612-927-6488 in Minneapolis, down there in Eden Prairie, places like that. Don't forget, Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul. So the disclaimer here is, this is a pretty heavy concept for me, and I'm sure that there's plenty of academic work done on this, and I'm sure that people have thought about this before, so I am afraid that I won't do it justice, and I apologize for that, because I'm just a guy in a pair of Carhartt overalls and a jacket and some gloves walking around with the digital recorder at midnight on the street in suburban America. Right? So I don't have Harvard University's tools at my disposal, and I'm certainly not a graduate of Harvard, so you'll forgive me. But I watched this movie, and I thought, this morning when I got up and I was drinking my coffee, I thought to myself, how can I put this? How much are we locked in the time that we live in, and how much can we actually do? Because we're all on a journey together through time, and there are things that came before called history, and there are things that will come after called the future. And the reason I say that is, this movie gives a pretty good accounting of both the arguments for escalating the war in Vietnam, which turned out to be a disaster for Johnson in particular, but obviously for the rest of the country, as well as tactically withdrawing and letting it go. And they're pretty good arguments. I mean, if you were the president sitting there at that time, knowing what we knew at that time without the benefit of hindsight, you would make a decision, you would find making a decision about this problem to be pretty difficult because of the arguments made by some pretty learned people. Bob McNamara was no slouch. Clark Clifford was no slouch. You know, George Ball was no slouch. The generals were no slouches. And the other advisors were no slouches in terms of their education and their experience and their knowledge. And they'd all, of course, you know, come through the whole World War II and Depression period. So they were products of their time. And the question I had was, you know, if he had chosen to tactically withdraw from Vietnam in 1964 rather than to escalate, would the things that McNamara predicted, which would have been a security nightmare for the United States and Southeast Asia, essentially inviting more of the same kinds of guerrilla types of behavior from the Soviets, who were, you know, fostering these kinds of guerrilla movements all over the country, particularly in Latin America, and on and on and on, you know, would they have been able to actually get out of there without having to go through what they went through to escalate and to make a stand, even though it was a disaster? You don't need to answer that question so much as to apply it to the current time frame. Why do I say this? Well, we're about to inaugurate a president who's pretty controversial. This president-elect, pretty controversial guy, lots of expectations and beliefs about, you know, who he is and what he is. And you have people saying he's not my president, and you have Democrat leaders saying we're going to boycott the inauguration, which, you know, is unfortunate when you consider the fact that it's the presidency. So does that mean the Republicans are going to boycott the next inauguration of a Democrat president? You know, things like that. So it seems to be the beginning of a tumultuous time in history. We might look back on the 2000s as a relatively calm period in time, or, you know, this guy could turn out to be what the Republicans believe, which is that he's going to be this fantastic president, that he is going to slay all the dragons and fix everything, and he's going to be amazing. And, you know, it's very similar to what people thought Obama was going to be able to do. And the thought occurred to me, given the political forces in our country and the world, are we locked to a certain degree in time where we can't see the future? Certainly the people that are running these largely political offices. I think a lot of people think that presidents have a bank of buttons that they can push, and things happen. They push buttons and things happen, and all they have to do is simply desire. They're like a king, but they aren't. The U.S. presidency is nothing like a monarchy where the king is the final word, that he decides and this is done. If he decides to do something, it has to be done politically. He doesn't even have the power of a pope, who essentially is a king. He's elected by a council, but he is a king. Once he has the job, he is a monarch. He is the king of the Catholic Church, and if he wants to make a decision or do something, his word is God's word, right? The U.S. presidency, you know, if you don't have a political portfolio, or if you have an 18%, you know, approval rating or whatever, your word is worth nothing. Your word, when you say that you want this or want that, people just don't even listen to you. So it's a political position, and you have to have political capital, which all presidents have referred to famously usually at the worst possible times. You know, I remember George W. Bush's second term, and he stood up and said, I've got a lot of political capital and I intend to spend it. And it's almost laughable now, but his presidency, he spent that political capital really fast after that in the second term. Probably never should have said that, but that was his idea, that I won an election and now I've won one fair and square and I've got all this political capital. I'm going to do all these things. And I hear this triumph among Republicans, and I hear this abject fear that Trump, the authoritarian, is going to just step on people and he's going to do all these things. And we can't allow this. We have to stop this man from stepping into office and pushing all these buttons and doing all these things. And my simple question in this walk and talk is, what if, you know, there's only so much you can do at any one time? You know, what if the choices offered up to you at any one time you know, are just limited, and you can't see the future, so you're really limited to what you know at the time. And what does Trump know at the time? You know, so, and I'm not going to go through what he knows or doesn't know right now because I don't have the time for it. But I guess what I'm saying is that everyone should take a step back before this inauguration and take a look at where we are in time and try to get an idea of what the extant reality in this country is just prior to this man taking office, so that you can take stock of what our reality consists of. You know, in 1963-64, we just lost a president to assassination, which doesn't happen every day, obviously. And, you know, a guy who had been a senator from Texas rose through the ranks to become the Senate Majority Leader, started in Congress, was a protege of Sam Rayburn, who is one of the strongest, most powerful, speakers of the House in history, and became the Senate Majority Leader and was famous for getting things done for years as a Senate Majority Leader, famously bombastic and vindictive, and famously worked the phones, and was a workaholic and worked 14 hours a day, and became president by accident. You know, the Kennedys did not want him to be the vice presidential candidate. They didn't want Lyndon. They got stuck with Lyndon because they were told, you know, you're a bunch of Boston, you know, liberals, and you've got to have a Texas conservative, or, you know, you're not going to win the presidency. So they took Lyndon, and Lyndon worked hard for him. And it's possible in some ways that between old Joe Kennedy making deals and Lyndon down in Texas, this is how they won the presidency, right? What are the things in our time currently in 2016? What are the things that are hard and firm? What are the things that he has to make decisions about that he can't possibly know what's around the corner? And what are the things that people are going to advise him to do that in some ways we're kind of trapped by time and by the way people view things in Congress and in the states and governors and people like that were a thorn in Lyndon's side, like George Wallace, for example, or any of these other people. So it's a caution both to the people that think that he is going to be the greatest president in history and do all these things that they think he's going to do to fix everything, versus the people who are saying he's not my president and we have to do whatever we can do to stop him and so on. And barring a disaster, he is going to be inaugurated president, this coming week. So I'm asking whether or not there are constraints, there are historic constraints in time, because they're blind corners that these people can't see around. And I can hear people saying, well, Bob, that's why people make momentous decisions based on these political ideas, whatever these political ideas might be. But what if you just can't see around the corner and you don't know, and you don't know what is around the corner? And every presidency, every time, is like that. You cannot see around the corner. You do not know the future. You cannot predict the future. You can predict outcomes. You can say, I think that if you do this, this is what's going to happen. But, you know, sometimes that may not be true. And people have to make decisions on the best information available and the best advice available and move forward. And they can't possibly know. Now, when you're making decisions about where you're going to shop today, gee, I wish I'd have gone to, you know, Cub Foods because they had that they had those steaks on sale, but instead I went to Byerly's and I bought this, and it was okay, but I didn't know that they had ribs on sale at Cub, which is an inconsequential thing. And you can kick yourself. You could say, gee, I wish I'd have bought my car. I was going to buy a car, and I found this car at this price, and 2 days later, it was a better car at an even lesser price. And I always tell the story of my dad. Used to love to buy used cars, and we were going to buy a Buick Wildcat. And it was silver, and it was a convertible, and it was super cool. And we were going to buy this car, and my dad took it out and drove it. And my dad was the kind of guy that when he negotiated, he would spend an excruciating amount of time negotiating. And I can remember being a kid and sitting in the car, in the cold car, in the parking lot at the used car place for hours. hours while he went in and talked to these guys. So first we looked at a Pontiac Catalina convertible, which we wanted that one, right? We took a ride in it. We wanted it. No, that wasn't good enough. And then summer came, and he was still looking at cars, and he... Well, we went over there, and I still remember the sales guy's name. His name was Mal Lynn. And we went over to this Buick dealership, and they had this Buick Wildcat, that we all wanted. It was silver, and it was a Wildcat, which was like this, it was a great. It was the next one down from the Electra, so it was like a sporty Electra, right? Or a sporty LeSabre convertible back in the day. And we wanted this car so bad, and we were, and he took this thing out, and I can still remember driving with the top down, and Mal Lynn had his white Buick shirt on with the Buick logo on it, and my dad was driving, and the thing had a shimmy. It would start to shimmy, and if you know anything about cars in those days, they weren't made as well as they are today. I mean, everyone talks about the great 60s cars. They were great, but they were mechanically not always sound. So this thing had some kind of a shimmy in the front end that my dad did not like, and he would get it up to 45, 50 miles an hour, would start to shimmy, and Mal Lynn said, we're going to fix that. Reese, that was my dad's name. We're going to fix it, Reese. Don't worry about that. This is wonderful. My dad was not convinced and went round and round and round with Mal Lynn, and just finally decided, I'm not buying it. And, we were devastated. My sister and I were devastated because we wanted that car. We thought it was the coolest thing ever. This beautiful silver Wildcat with a convertible top, and it was just great. And I'll never forget my mom saying, well, sometimes you just make decisions with the best information that you have, and that's the way it is. And we didn't buy it. And a few weeks went by, and we were super depressed. kids, we were just super depressed because we weren't getting that car, and we were like, he's gonna buy another station wagon, it's gonna be a station wagon or a sedan, and we wanted a convertible. And well, he wanted a convertible too. We didn't know that, but my dad loved convertibles. So it wasn't too long later, Mal Lynn called up and said, come on down, I got another car for you to look at. And this was a white Electra convertible, and I'll never forget. It was the bomb. That white Electra was super awesome. And we took a ride in it, and he was like, you know what? This is the car. And it was the car. It was a lock. And he bought it, and we had that car, and I'll never forget that car. And, we went everywhere in that car with the top down and how great it was. So the lesson there is you never know what's around the corner. And I don't mean to say that, to extend that kind of a thing to national politics. That's not what I mean. What I'm talking about is an inconsequential decision that taught a kid a lesson, right? Well, maybe we as citizens need to learn a little bit of a lesson about where we are in time. Sometimes the worst things don't happen, and sometimes the best things don't happen. Sometimes what happens is what is supposed to happen. And, you can fight that. You can fight that influence. Lyndon Johnson certainly could have chosen not to escalate the Vietnam War. But what would have happened had he not done that? George W. Bush could certainly have elected not to invade Iraq. What would have happened had he not decided to invade Iraq or convinced the rest of the American people that we had to invade Iraq, or actually gotten the CIA to convince the rest of the American people that we needed to invade Iraq? Where would we be today? Where would the Republican Party be today? Would there have even been a President Obama because of that? So those are the kinds of questions, of course, in an alternate universe. There's an alternate universe where the Confederates, won the Civil War, and there's an alternate universe where Hitler is, still alive. And the leader, actually, he's in Bariloche, Argentina, right? There's an alternate universe where, Tojo won and so forth. We don't know. We just don't know what will happen at any given time. But I guess it's just a caution to everybody. This is still, as sclerotic as it is, it's still a representative government. It moves very slowly. Things do not always happen as quickly as people think. And, conclusions and directions of things take time. Sometimes they're sudden, and sometimes it's the right or wrong thing. But no matter what it is, at least for the time being, I don't think it's going to be the end of the world. I hope I don't have to eat those words. But if it is the end of the world, guess what? It won't make any difference. All right, it's getting cold out here, so I better go in. I've talked long enough. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for emergency service. Sometimes when it warms up, that's when you have the problem. It isn't when it's super cold. When it warms up, then you start having certain kinds of plumbing problems because of the stresses that your system has been put under during the cold weather. So when it warms up, and it's going to be in the 30s this week in podcast time, if you have a problem, don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating from St. Paul to the full metro, metro-wide from St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. And also, you know, this is the time of the year when, guess what? The old car gives up the ghosts, and you're like, I don't want to buy a brand new car. I want to go see Mal Lynn and buy a Buick Wildcat convertible, right? So no, you want something very reliable, like an SUV. Expeditions, Yukons, the Dodge Charger, Ford Crown Vics while they last, Ford Police sedans, Ford Police SUVs. Don't forget xgovernmentcars.com, Minnesota's only dealer specializing in one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs. I've had three Crown Vics, and now, of course, Mobile Podcast Command all came from
xgovernmentcars.com.
Pilots, you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, and Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator to help you fly safe. The bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives because it's a visual indicator of the amount of lift being produced by your wings. It's so important on the final turn to land or when you're maneuvering at low altitudes. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks to you guys for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, blogtalkradio.com, GCNlive.com for the radio show, and of course, liking, sharing, favoriting, and so forth, and following on Facebook and Twitter, subscribing at thebobdavispodcast.com, and listening to the audio stream when you hit the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, and of course, for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command, diesel fuel at thebobdavispodcast.com. All right, time to go inside.